Thanks, Dr. Scott. I want to express a sincere apology on the behalf of from Dr. Lal for not being here for some reasons. So myself, Sandeep Kumar, I'm working as a research scientist with Dr. Lal. I'm presenting on agriculture mitigation of climate change potential and challenges. To begin with, I want to show you this planet Earth graph, which has been taken by Apollo 17 crew of NASA. And you can see here showing the full view of Antarctic ice cap, and which has been like depleting since then. And life on this Earth has been started. This Earth has been originated maybe about 4.5 billion years back, and since then life has been originated 1 billion after that. So most of the water, like about 61% of the Earth's water stored in the Antarctic ice cap. So you can see here the total mass of water as compared to the Earth is pretty small, and only 2.5% is the fresh water, out of which about 70% is stored in glaciers and ice, and about 0.3% stored in the as a surface water. Carbon is also important as related to after the water, and carbon in the earth is in oceans. The soil carbon pool has been stored about 42,000 petagram, and soil store about 4,000 petagram carbon, and atmosphere and biosphere they count about like 1,000 petagram. Carbon is the fourth most abundant element in the universe after hydrogen, helium, and oxygen. And there is extremely little carbon dioxide present in the atmosphere compared to that in rocks and ocean. And when the sinks and sources are not equal, then the atmosphere is going to be overwhelmed. So global change in our ecosystem, it starts about 17 years from starts of the pre-industrial era, when the 95% of the Earth's ice-free land was undisturbed land, wild land, and that land has been left about 45% in 2000 year. And this change has been occurred because of the agricultural land increased from 5% in 1700 to 39% in 2000 because of the increased population and food demand of the people. And the pasture land increased from 3% in 1700 to 26% in 2000. So this global agricultural land use, you can see here the agriculture cropland area has been changed from 2001.54 giga hectare to 2050 to 1.89. So about a 23% increase has been happened here. And for the pasture land, the area 16% increase in the pasture land area as compared to 2000 to 2050 is predicted area. And when you can see the irrigated land, in 2000 it was 280 mega hectare, and this change is predicted to be 89%. So because of the resources scarcity and the increased world population. So on the onset of human-induced emission, it has been started long back, about 8,000 years back. And for the methane emission, it has been started on the dawn of the settled agriculture with the forestation, soil cultivation, and spread of rice paddies and raising cattle. So this slide shows the total global carbon budget since 1850. The total emissions about 500 gigaton, and 17% of that is fossil fuel. That's 375 gigaton. And land change use has contributed about 100 gigaton, and cement production about 25 gigaton. But if you look at the sinks, ocean has contributed about 150 gigaton, and the terrestrial biosphere contributed about 125 gigaton, and atmosphere is equal to 225 gigaton carbon. The projected emission between 2000 and 2030, it has been like predicted that fossil fuel will be 190 gigaton, and deforestation 106 gigaton. So these emissions will affect the ecosystem from which we derived food, fiber, fuel and shelter. So we need to control these emissions. There are several methods. So this slide shows the contemporary global carbon petagram carbon per year budget. So you can see a source, the total sources in 1980s, it was 6.9 petagram carbon per year and raised to 9.5 in 2000s. And sinks, the 1980s total was 5.3 and it increased to 7.2 in 2000. And there are some unknown sinks. About in 2000 we found about 2.3. So it was reported in the G8 summit meetings that a global warming increase beyond 2 degrees Celsius is unacceptable. And every plus 1 degree Celsius increase in temperature will delay the growing season in Northern Europe and Canada. And net global emissions must be reduced by 85% from 2000 level by 2050 and peak no later than 2015. So how to control these emissions? So we have to stabilize the sinks, should be equal to sources, which is very difficult to lower the carbon dioxide concentration if sinks should be higher than sources. And to do this, the strategy is to reduce the sources and increase the sinks, minimize the emissions from forest and peatlands, and attempt to make agriculture carbon dioxide neutral. So how to sequester the atmospheric carbon dioxide into long-lived pools? First is geological sequestration. We can sequester the carbon dioxide, inject into old oil wells, unminable coal mines, saline aquifers. We can sequester by chemical sequestration, chemical scrubbing, for example, absorption of carbon dioxide, mineralization. And then oceanic sequestration is same as the geological sequestration. We can inject carbon dioxide several thousand feet down into the ocean. And second is iron fertilization, where we can intentionally introduce the iron on the surface of ocean to increase the phytoplankton growth to reduce the carbon dioxide emissions. And next one is biological sequestration. We can improve sequestration by afforestation, agroforestry, reforestation, and biofuel plantation. And the last one is pedologic sequestration, which our lab is more interested in. It's how to improve the soil organic carbon in agricultural soils, degraded soils, wetlands, and secondary carbonates, and biochar. So this slide shows the technological options for carbon sequestration in terrestrial ecosystems. First one is a biomass carbon in forest. So to improve the soil organic carbon in forest, we need to decide species selection and site preparation. We need to do some nutrient management, stand management and urban forest to improve the carbon in the forest. In wetland management, the water table management is very important, sediment control in the watershed and enhancing the plant biodiversity. In soil carbon farming, we can enhance the soil carbon sequestration by erosion control, conservation tillage, for example, no-till farming, cover cropping, use of mulch farming, manure application, agroforestry, rotational grazing, controlled grazing, and lawns and turfs. And the last one is the biofuel plantation. So we can improve the biofuel plant, the land which is not covered under the agriculture crop, we can use that for the biofuel plantation to improve the soil carbon sequestration. This graph has been taken from the Lal 2004 publication, where you can see here on the y-axis the relative carbon pool, which is we can take at 100%, and after maybe 50, 60 years with the degraded soils and lot of cultivation, the carbon pool has been decreased, and with the accelerated erosion, and if we want to maintain, recover this carbon pool, we have to use some conservation practices, use of no-till farming, integrated nutrient management, cover crops, biochar, and few of these practices. So shows that we can, this is the attainable potential. We can recover this much carbon pool. But by the combination of these practices, even it can go up to maximum potential. It can recover as we found previously in the beginning, but research has been shown that if we use these practices in combination, for example, no-till with the cover crops or manuring, even we can go beyond the original level. But that's very difficult. So, what are the researchable issues to improve the sequestration and remove the emissions? So first is the method of measurement of organic matter is very important. It depends on the depth scale. And second is the baseline is very important. And third one is the climate change, how it affecting the soil organic matter, the fate of soil transported by erosional processes, and management practices, nutrient management, and also issues of no-till farming and what are their benefits. Soil organic carbon and how it's related to the crop yield and validation of the models which are used for predicting organic carbon pool with the change in climate. And the last one is commodification and societal value of the soil organic matter. So measurement of soil organic matter has been measured since started in 1860s. By these brilliant scientists, and the carbon dioxide evolution from the soil was first measured in 1794 by Hawes. On the fertility purposes, the measurement of soil organic matter is required. The quantity should be concentration basis, and depth, if we can measure up to plow depth, that should be fine for the fertility purposes. Precision, about one decimal place when expressed as a percentage, and scale is from plot scale to parent scale. But accuracy of the conventional method of measuring soil organic carbon matter is that both wet and dry conversion methods have been adequate for the purpose of assessing management-induced changes in the soil organic carbon. And measurement of soil for mitigating climate change, how can we measure a soil organic carbon pool accurately, transparently, verifiably, and economically over a landscape scale, watershed, or at a larger regional scale? And we need to see the changes over at least 1 to 2 year period based on the reference, or based on the baseline. Specific needs for trading carbon credits. So quantity should be in soil organic carbon pool should be in megagram carbon per hectare, depth 1 meter or higher, frequency again 1 to 2 years, and the precision should be in megagram per hectare, and lands and scale should be higher, or at least at a farm scale or and landscape scale. Why bulk density is important? So bulk density is very important for the assessment of soil organic carbon pool, which cannot be assessed without the knowledge of this bulk density, and estimation of this density can create some errors in the soil carbon sequestration. So this graph shows that if you the baseline soil organic carbon or soil carbon, and with the use of recommended practices, it will, and this much is the carbon sequestration. Soil organic matter and climate change. What are the impacts of climate change and solar processes? There are some unknown issues. Will climate change amplify the soil organic matter depletion, accelerate the soil erosion? Will it alter the global carbon cycle more drastically? Or will climate change affect net primary productivity through carbon dioxide fertilization effect? These are the some unknown issues. Similar as will soil processes have mitigative impact? Will these processes adversely impact the agronomic yield? Will these processes increase the land waste carbon sink or decrease the soil organic carbon pool through carbon input in the soil at high temperatures? So these are the some unknown issues we are still trying to study more. What are the issues with the no-till farming? It has been reported in the research that no-till has been improved the soil organic carbon, but still there are some issues if we not use this farming in an effective way. There are constraints to adopting no-till in developing countries. Effectiveness of this farming in carbon sequestration in soil organic matter, increase in the surface and decrease in the subsurface. And there are also hidden carbon cost of the chemicals to remove the weeds. And cellulosic ethanol production from the crops residue in industrialized countries have also, if we are removing the crop residue from the no-till, then it cannot be effective. So these are the soil carbon profile in tillage methods. This is the no-till method, higher in the surface and decreased on the bottom. So in the plow tail, for the plow layer, it's lower, but the redistribution of the carbon and sometimes higher at the bottom. So this much carbon higher in the no-till, and so the tillage depth and the sampling depth is very much important as for the measuring the soil organic carbon, soil carbon sequestration point of view. So to compare which system is better, plow-till or no-till, we need to measure at least about 50 to 60 centimeter depth. The rate of carbon sequestration is higher in wetland and lower in the followed by afforestation, turf, even in no-till about 300 to 400 kilogram per hectare per year, and raised land is even lower than that. And in relation to climate, carbon sequestration is higher in wet and moist climates, about 1,000 to 2,000 kilogram per hectare per year. And in dry, cool is medium. And in hot and dry climates, it's very less, about 50 kilogram per hectare per year. So where management is possible to improve the carbon sequestration? So we can improve the carbon sequestration in degraded ecosystems to manage the degraded soils, eroded soils, salinized soils, chemically degraded, physically degraded, mined and drained peatlands. And we can also improve carbon sequestration in managed ecosystems like croplands. We can adopt no-till farming, cover crops, manure, or there are some other practices we can use to improve the carbon sequestration in these croplands, plantation, grasslands, and forest lands. So building a bridge towards a low carbon civilization, so decoupling economic growth from the carbon dioxide, the carbon sequestration in the terrestrial ecosystems, adopting a strategy which can beneficial for the nature, poor and deprived individuals, and better for the land managers. So natural flux from the soil to atmosphere. The natural flux is an order of magnitude larger than the carbon emitted by the burning of fossil fuels. And thus, the environmental factors that alter the carbon and nitrogen turnover have a strong potential for influencing the atmospheric concentration of greenhouse gases. So negative emissions is opposite of the carbon dioxide emission into ground. The land availability of negative emissions, this is another way of to improve the carbon sequestration by injecting the, by using geological sequestration or some other method. So the sub-Saharan African region has a higher availability for the, it's about 0.89 gigahectare, and followed by South Central Pacific, and you can see a total world land available for the negative emissions is about 2.368 gigahectare. So this is another way to improve the carbon sequestration and control the greenhouse gases. So this is a technical soil carbon capacity. The cropland has one, and rangeland and degraded, so we can improve their sink capacity to improve the carbon sequestration. So it has been reported that there is no yet carbon, non-carbon source which cannot emit the emissions. So every source is emitting the emissions between, we cannot control the emission, but we cannot completely control the, reduce the emission, but we can control a little bit. So between 1850 and 2000, the emissions were 300 gigaton, but between 2000 and 2100, it was about three times higher. So rate of emission in 1990 was 5.5 gigaton carbon per year, and it's predicted about 2100, 2035. So humans and global warming, each country and every citizen of the planet Earth are both cause and the victims of the present and future climate change, albeit to a varying extent. And global warming, soil carbon. The question is, can the global warming be entirely mitigated by soil carbon sequestration? The answer is no. But do we need soil carbon sequestration for improving the environment and feeding the world? The answer is, of course, yes. Thanks for your patience. I can add a little bit.
Dare you to get good measurements of what carbon change has occurred
I think in the slide what he wants to say that the minimum, at least for the, if I have a data for 2 years, 2 to 3 years, that's a minimum. Of course, if I have data for 20, 30, 50, or maybe 60 years, we can tell the better picture. And for that sampling depth, I think this is just a general, like if you want, I'm saying here, like if I want to compare the two-till system, the plow-till or no-till, I cannot make a judgment that, okay, if I sample only 20 centimeter, if the carbon is higher in no-till and not better in plow-till, so which one is better? So for that, to make that effective comparison, at least the sampling depth should be 50 to 60 centimeter. Maybe that depends on the situation, but...
Okay.